I discovered the online casino, which that was kind of the beginning of the downfall there. The gratification period with sports, you have to wait a few hours, and then you find that while the game's going on, I can play blackjack on my phone. And then blackjack morphs into so many other games. Before you know it, I'm playing slots, which I used to make fun of. I'm finding it the only way to get the gratification so quickly, and the only way to maybe hit a jackpot. I was just losing control of my time and money, and I felt my mental state like I'm just getting used to this and I'm not really caring anymore.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Brad. He's a 29-year-old who just recently entered recovery from gambling. Brad made his last bet on the 21st of January, 2025. Brad, thanks for joining today.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, of course, man. And when I had asked you like what kind of before we started the call, I asked you what kind of gambling you got into, and it seems like the answer might have been numerous answers. So why don't we jump right into it? Like what's the gambling been like for you, and how'd you get started with it?
The as well, farthest back I can remember is in middle school, we had a fantasy football club, and I thought it was really cool to get involved in something. And I obviously love football. It was more like a daily, like what we see in the daily fantasy league before it even was a thing, because we had a new lineup every week that you could pick and you get points for. So I joined that, and you know, they post the standings every week. So it's good to just see how you're doing, but there's no money involved. So you just kind of get to compare how you do to the rest of the school, but it's a feeling of winning and losing. As I started to get more involved online and do fantasy football through ESPN, I got this ad on the side of ESPN, and it was for Draft Street, which was one of the very first daily fantasy sites. And it was bought out by DraftKings a long time ago, but it was kind of it got me into that type of thing, which is more active involvement every single day. Join a new leagues, and then you get involved in different sports, basketball, baseball, golf, everything really. And then, you know, it kind of morphs from there, getting involved in sports books offshore. At the time, because it wasn't legal then. When it becomes legal, you get involved in, you know, FanDuel, DraftKings, all the different sites, and I grew up in Buffalo, New York, but I'm now in Philadelphia, PA, and Pennsylvania was one of the first states to legalize gambling. So, you know, I jumped right in. I was excited about it, and it just kind of evolves from there.
Within your timeline now, you've shifted from daily fantasy sports to regular sports betting. And this was what, maybe like 10, 9, 10 years ago?
Yeah, I would say back at the beginning of college, which is a while ago for me at this point, 2013, 2014, probably when I started to dabble a bit with sports books.
How did things progress when you went to school? Like, did the amounts that you were gambling increased? Did the frequency increase? Were you gambling with other people? Like, what was the experience like?
Yeah, I would say I've never really been a high unit better. So that I don't think has really increased a whole lot, even up to present day. At least when it comes to the of sports betting. I know we can get into casino a little later. I think that the social aspect plays into it. You start to hang out in groups that you have common interests, and gambling became mine. And I've always been into sports, but gambling takes its own, like it becomes a hobby. As sad of a hobby as that is, you just spend a lot of time in social settings doing that, and then I would say that causes the frequency to go up. The dollar amount, maybe not as much, but if you're placing a bunch of bets, that when one finishes, you got the next one on, and then live betting comes into play. That wasn't really a thing early on, and now when your bet is losing, you can just place another one, catch up. So
Do you think that when you were in school, sports betting was like a popular thing to do? Or do you think it was like more of like a niche thing that you were doing? Like, how many people were around you? Were a lot of people doing it?
I don't actually think it was a super popular thing to do. I'm trying to remember back like 9, 10 years ago. It was just kind of getting on the scene in the US, getting more popular all over. And college is obviously a place that gambling can be prevalent. Maybe nowadays it might be different for kids in college right now, but I think at the time it was more like, I don't want to say I was hiding it, but I had my groups, and then the other groups, you don't talk about it. I would say more niche, because there's college basketball, college football, and I went to Villanova right outside of Philadelphia, so we were obviously not, football is not as big, but basketball, the tournament was a big time. But it was more excitement for the team. And I can even remember myself. I think more of my excitement was around, I hope Villanova does well. I hope we make it all the way. I still have my bets going on. Nowadays, it's kind of shifted. Whoever I'm betting on is who I want to win.
So it shifted from being about, you know, adding some interest to the game, rooting for your own team, to just now it being totally about the gambling.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned that you're not someone who was betting large amounts of money at any point during your gambling. What made it a problem for you then?
Yeah, it's a good question, Rob. I think that there's a couple things for me. One would be when it started to become more of a private thing that I was doing, I was starting to find myself hiding bets. I was going to the bathroom a lot, which I may have heard on one of your podcasts, if about yourself, going to the bathroom a lot and just kind of camping out there to get a couple extra bets in. I discovered the online casino, which that was kind of the beginning of the downfall there. Not to jump around a lot, but the gratification period with sports, you have to wait a few hours or a certain amount of time for something to finish. And then you find that while the game's going on, I can play blackjack on my phone. Yeah. And then blackjack morphs into so many other games. And then before you know it, I'm playing slots, which I used to make fun of people playing slots. I thought it was crazy. And I'm doing it because I'm finding it the only way to get the gratification so quickly and the only way to maybe hit a jackpot. It just started to snowball into something beyond placing a $25 bet on a football game. It became placing several $25 bets within such small increments. In a way, I created my bigger unit size.
So it was like death by a thousand cuts instead of one big bet. Yeah. I think that, you know, the feeling that you're describing is that as you're building a tolerance towards the thrill that you're getting from gambling, you have to have it happening at a faster frequency in order to feel the same thrill or is the same pleasure from it. And I think we're seeing that design happening with sports betting as well, with the live betting, but with like live parlays and all these crazy odds boosts that come in promoting you to basically make parlay bets. Do you feel like that was what was happening with your sports betting as well as time went on, that it became riskier bets within the game itself?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I hadn't really thought about that in depth, but I believe it to be true. Like, I could not see an odds boost without taking advantage. So, like you mentioned, they offer them on parlays because they want us to place parlays, because they lose. I take advantage of them, lose most of them, and then find myself chasing bigger parlays because a straight bet just doesn't really give you the excitement. You get a small return on investment, and that's not really a good way to think about it. When you're trying to get a return on investment on a gamble, it's supposed to be an entertainment.
So going back to your timeline now, you've reached a point where you're gambling on things like slots, you're doing riskier bets. At what point was this happening? Is this like as of pretty recently, or has this been going on for a few years now?
Yeah, it's developed. I would say that last year it was happening throughout the year, but it was getting worse and worse. And it wasn't until maybe November, December that I start to really think about it and try to get more serious about the things I'm putting in place to limit myself, because it's hard. It's hard to really accept completely giving it up. Throughout the year, I had put in limits on my own. I never really had a problem with going to the casino itself, so everything was on the apps, and every app has responsible gaming features, which I always appreciated, but there's ways out. And that's what I've found in my journey, is there's always going to be a way to really, like, if you feel like you want to gamble, you're going to try your best to find a way. I've kind of learned a lot about myself, like how destructive I can be in certain moments, and then a day later be like, what was I really doing? Like, why? Like, it feels like a two different people. And so those limits would get undone, and there's a waiting period. And as the waiting period goes on, I get more and more excited that I'm going to be able to gamble again. I might get thrown a deposit bonus, which is same idea as a profit boost. I have a very hard time resisting.
We'll dive into how to handle that in later on in the video, but one thing that you said is like these responsible gambling tools, you appreciate them. And I think that, scientifically they work well, but the problem with them is that they are so separate between sports books and casinos that you can just bounce from one to another. If there was like one localized sports book that took the entire country's bets and you self-excluded from that, or you put a limit on that, that might actually work. But if I put a limit on myself at MGM, I can go right over to FanDuel. And if I decide that that's not enough, I can go to DraftKings and then Caesars and then Bet365, PointsBet. There's so many. And that's the real problem. There's the limits might work on that book, but they don't work overall. What made you realize that things were getting worse? Because was it increasing frequency? Was it the bets were getting more risky in themselves? Like, what was it that kind of woke you up to say, like, this is getting worse. I need to make a change.
Yeah, something comes to mind when you say that. I think it's the I was just doing things that I never thought I'd do. And I'm not talking like I knew how bad it could get. I had heard random stories, and I know that it can get to the point of doing illegal activity. So I'm not talking that far. I'm trying to let myself catch it before I get to that point. Just simple things like gambling in the shower. Just something like why am I bothering? Like, why do I need to do that right now? The overall hiding of it, trying to find times where I could be alone to indulge in this, and really not caring so much about the money aspect of it, just hitting deposit over and over, and using credit cards was becoming a common theme, which I never thought I would do. And again, it's just a simple thing, and you pay a fee, pay a cash advance fee, but it's just something that my background is in accounting, and I always thought of myself as reserved. Accountants generally have their finances in order, and I was just losing control of my time and money, and I felt my mental state like I'm just getting used to this and I'm not really caring anymore.
Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. There's a surprising number of people that I've spoken to, and it's surprising I guess to an outside perspective, I guess I kind of understand it. People who are accountants, people in finance, people who work at banks, people who provide investment advice, like financial advisors as well, huge population that struggle with gambling. And I was a financial analyst. I wasn't doing anything that took too much brain power, but I was working with numbers. And so like there is this massive correlation where you would think it wouldn't be, because as you said, accountants tend to be more reserved with their finance, but maybe it comes down to like, what were your intentions with your gambling? Were you doing it for that thrill or that escape? Or was it something in the back of your head that said, I might get rich from this?
I don't know if I ever felt like I was going to get rich. I mean, again, I'm placing, at least at the beginning, I'm just placing small bets. I think it's more for the entertainment. I still miss it, and I still kind of battling with how I'm going to handle it, because that entertainment aspect, it does add a little bit. I never treated it as this is going to be another form of income or anything. It snowballs, and instead of another form of income, it just becomes an expense. And it's something that I maybe thought I needed for entertainment. Like, I need to budget this amount of money to make sure I have it in my account so that I can be throwing bets here and there to feel something. You kind of feel more involved in things, in social groups. I grew up a pretty shy kid, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but when you're in the social settings and you have a random game that's on the TV to talk about, and you can kind of share a common interest that you're rooting for, it's more exciting. So I think it's always really been based on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think of like alcohol when they think of like social, I call it like social lubrication. When I'm out at like a party or an event and if I'm not holding a cup of some kind, like I don't know what to do with my hands, it can kind of ease that social anxiety to an extent. And if you have sports betting as like common ground, you have an immediate way to spark a conversation with almost any guy, especially in a major city, especially in the finance field. You know that they're probably betting on sports to some extent, hopefully not to the extent that you and I are, but you know, like, there's some common ground there, 100%. It's been over a week since you placed your last bet, and we're moving forward. What have you done thus far to stay away from gambling?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I tried on my own with all the various limits that the apps have to offer. And it got to the point where I thought I needed some outside help. So I involved my parents, which I never really thought I would be doing. I didn't want them to worry, and I didn't want to feel like someone had control over me. It's a natural feeling for a gambler. You want control and then you lose control. I need to take steps forward. So I involved them. I give them credit. And this is only a week ago at this point, but my mom encouraged me to go to Gamblers Anonymous right away. And as I was talking to her, I'm like, yeah, I'll think about it. I'll get around to it. She's like, it will really make me feel better if you go tonight, like do it for me, basically. And I said, okay, I'll entertain her. I'll do it. So that first day I went to Gamblers Anonymous, which again, it's like, it's such a sobering feeling going, like all of this happening at once, because you look back and that's the problem. You get stuck in the past, and I'm just thinking about like, how did I let it get to this point? But that's not really the point right now. I should be looking forward. So stepping into Gamblers Anonymous, I had an open mind. I want to listen. I've been to 3 meetings now, and it's been great. I've met a couple people, talked to them even outside of the meetings. Yeah, it's a great support group, program. So that I will say I'm battling with, because I feel like everybody's journey is different. They've got their steps. I'm still trying to accept everything and take tangible steps forward.
I hope that it's something that changes with that rigidness of the program, because for the people that it works for, it very much works for. But the percentage could be increased, I think, if there was some more wiggle room in some certain areas. In particular, if you read the Unity program, I'm pretty sure we're in violation of 10 or 11 here by having this conversation. But because we're having this conversation, hundreds, if not thousands of more people might end up going to one of those meetings. And so it's like, you know, which side of the coin are you going to choose? I think it has to be a little subjective, but it is really awesome that you've been going to those meetings. What kind of things have you said in those meetings? Have you been sharing about the drives for you to gamble? Have you been sharing about your current financial situation? Like, what's it been like for you going to those?
I know it's only been three meetings, but at all three meetings, I have kind of waited, and I've wanted to choose to listen first and hear everybody else's stories and see if I can contribute anything to maybe words that they're saying. I try to pick up on different topics and maybe see if I can shed a light on that using my own personal experiences. So I would say, I mean, the first meeting I was more like, this is why I'm here. This is what got me here. These are the problems. Just kind of some of the things that I talked to you about 10, 15 minutes ago. But I find myself like I want to provide something that maybe could help other people. And that's part of the reason why I guess I'm here right now, too. It's a collective effort. I mean, I met somebody who had been there for 45 years, and they say that they still learn something from the people who show up day one, which I think is crazy, but there's probably some truth behind it.
Yeah. That's awesome. What you're doing, though, is I think the old timers call it 12th stepping. Maybe that's the phrase. It's like you want to immediately use your experience to try to help other people while you're still healing yourself, mm-hmm. which is one of the moral dilemmas that I have in having conversations with people that are kind of earlier along in the process, but it's also really important to do. So as long as you feel like you're staying healthy, that your mind's right, if you keep contributing, keep helping people because you're making an impact and it can absolutely help you as well. Besides that, there's three other things that I personally focused on, but it sounds like you're already kind of doing most of them, but I'll run through them just for people in the audience and feel free to chime in throughout. But so it's going to support group meetings. It's finding other things to do with your time. In fact, what are you doing now in your free time? Like, what are you doing for fun?
Yeah, that's something I also battle with. As you self-reflect, it's like gambling was my main hobby. I have to try to find other things to do, things that I used to do maybe, and then new things. In the short term, at least, I'm running a lot, actually. I'm staying active. I'm not a very big guy, so I'm not a big, like, gym buff, but I do like to run. It gives me a goal to, like, something I had put off is just doing races. Maybe not in a competitive way, but just in a way to complete. And as I'm sure you're aware of, in Philly, there's the Broad Street Run in May. And I think that's something that I just would like to participate in and then maybe see where it goes from there, because there's just a natural sense of like wanting to work towards something, wanting to compete for something, and I have to not want it right away like I do with gambling.
You say you don't have to necessarily be competitive. I'm sensing that there's some apprehension to that because you don't want it to be another problem. But the thing is, man, if you're over competitive with running a half marathon, that's so much better than being over competitive with sports betting. Like, there's only so many negative things that could stem from that. I think a sense of competition is totally fine. And as people who are, you know, struggling with gambling, we're hyper-competitive people, whether it's with others or with ourselves. And I think I'm hyper-competitive. I'm trying to make 100 of these this year. That's ridiculous, and I'm exhausted. But that's like a goal that, at worst, it just means I'm tired. Like, we're making good progress with it. I see no issues with being competitive if you're not, you know, gambling on your placement in the race, I guess. Yeah. No, that's an awesome thing to do. And finding other things, it's tough at first because, like, no matter what you're going to try, it's not going to give you that same thrill. But if you are consistently trying new things, eventually, as time goes on, you're going to get more enjoyment out of them. So that's great that you've already identified that. The third thing on the list is to do the self-exclusions. So you had mentioned that some of them had split-offs. Have you self-excluded in Pennsylvania at this point?
I have not. And that's something that I've put a lot of thought to, and I still do. I commend the people who get to that point. I think that I'm not there. I'm just still battling it because there's things that I miss and things that I hold on to. But I still have all the limits in place, but in terms of self-exclusion, I do not currently have that in place.
Let's dive into it a little bit. What is the thing that's keeping you there? Is it the uncertainty of like knowing, not knowing what's going to come next? Is it that you just still love it so much that you're not ready to part with it? Like you've been to three meetings in the last 9 days. What's keeping you know, keeping that one string attached?
It's probably a couple things. I think just the unknown is part of it. The unknown of what's going to happen, and the unknown of will I be able to undo it, honestly. And I know that's not a good mentality to have, maybe, but just having something that permanent in life, it's a scary step to take. Two would be part of it that I miss, and I'm just having trouble coming to terms with, am I really at that point where I'm going to completely give this up? You know, I got somebody on one shoulder, somebody on the other shoulder. It's just that it's that kind of thing where it's like, as of, I want to say 3 years ago, me and a couple buddies have started to make it a yearly trip that we go to the first round, and I've already had that booked, so I'm set to go in March of this year, which is coming around the corner pretty quickly. So a trip like that is in the back of my mind. It's like, can I really go to a tournament where it is historically the trip itself has been centered around sports betting, and I'm just going to not do it? Yeah, it's hard to take that leap, and part of me is like, well, you're just being weak by not taking that leap. But then the other part of me is like, oh, well, it's just entertainment. It's a weekend. And then just don't gamble. Don't do the irresponsible stuff after that, as long as you're excluded from the, or as long as you're limited to the point where you can't deposit. As I say it, it doesn't feel like the best answer, but it's something that I think other people could resonate with. I've heard other people on your podcast talk about a similar idea, and I find myself resonating with it because it is a struggle to give up something that, while in the grand scheme of things, it maybe isn't an important thing in life in general, it's something that you've had for so long that was just a little piece of entertainment that you just want to feel involved with the crew that you're with.
I know the exact feeling. And earlier on in my time in Gamblers Anonymous, there would have been like a really strong temptation for me to tell you, you're wrong. You have to do this. You have to leave it behind. You know what's going to happen. But the truth is, right? No matter what I say, once this call is done, it's up to you to make the decisions. And if I tell you to do one thing, that's my opinion. That's my method that worked for me. Maybe you're not there yet. Maybe you're not ready. Maybe you are, but you have to come to that decision for yourself. So, no matter what I tell you, I think the best thing to remember is you have to be honest with yourself. Are you telling yourself these things, the devil on the shoulder things, just because you want to keep the rush going? Or is it because you truly believe you can do it responsibly? And if you can answer that question for yourself, I think it naturally leads you to what conclusion to come to. But it's got to be you. Fourth thing that I like to talk about to kind of keep what's kept me away from gambling, you had already mentioned that you've been doing, which is like accountability and financial oversight from a family member. And you've mentioned that you are very close with your mom and you've gone through that already. But for someone in the audience, it's like someone else seeing what you're spending or seeing what you're doing on a regular basis adds that layer of like, I need to make sure that I'm staying clean, staying on this path. Or they're gonna, you know, be pissed with me. And in the short term, it does make a difference. But how's that experience been?
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that before, and it's something that I had conversations with my bank on the phone about it, and they told me to go into the branch, and I haven't made that step yet. I'm definitely curious about it and think that it could be helpful. I know I'm speaking a little vaguely, but I'm thinking in my head just having a family member see the transactions and maybe even have authorization to approve or decline. I don't know if that's a thing or not. But yeah, something like that, it definitely gives accountability, and I foresee it like allowing me to make better choices in the long run, because then I know somebody's looking, somebody's watching. And while I don't really want my mom to be babysitting me when I'm 29 years old. Like she's over that. It's something that it could be good in the long run.
Banking system is, that's a very standard way the system operates in Europe and the UK, but not in the US. The US is so, I almost want to say it's like predatory from a banking perspective, where there's not a lot of consumer protection things. So there's not a lot of ways to put restrictions on yourself like that. There is a card called the TrueLink financial card that you can sign up for an account with, and it does give you those options. It was originally made for, I believe, elderly family members that you wanted to monitor their spending as their mental health was declining, or their mental cognition was declining. But I think they're opening it up into like the addiction space as well. I don't partner with them, so I've actually never used the card, but my mom managed my bank account. And yeah, you feel like a baby to an extent, but then you think about it a little bit more, and it's like you're allowing financial oversight. That doesn't mean they're deciding what you're doing every day. Like, you still have a lot of autonomy, and a lot of the reasons not to do it are made up so that you can keep gambling, is what I found. Like, oh, I don't want my mom to see what I'm spending. What do I buy? I go to like Wawa and Chipotle. Like, who cares what she sees me, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing important on there.
But we're coming up at time, so I just want to thank you again for the time here, Brad. I want to have you on again if you're willing, like maybe in 5 or 6 months, to get a follow-up of how things have been going. But once again, it's going to come down to making the decisions you're comfortable with, finding out more about your relationship to gambling, and hopefully getting away from it if that's what's going to yield the best outcome for you. So I want to thank you for the time, and to anyone in the audience that wants to hear another story of someone who's recently trying to stop gambling, check out this video. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.